Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We have an esteemed member of the United States Congress in the studio with me this afternoon. And it's not often that they look tentative or nervous, but Roddy Davis, ladies and gentlemen, knows what's coming this afternoon on several fronts. And we welcome him into enemy territory as a Braves fan. I'm sorry, I can't even get it. You're a Braves fan, right? You've admitted this.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Were you able to watch what happened or listen to what happened yesterday, or were you otherwise occupied?
You know, I actually had my good buddy Blaine Lucktemeyer. He was up in my district helping me out.
Fellow Missouri congressman?
Yep. We had,
is that still the 9th district? Is that what they all did all those over? I always knew it as the 9th because that was Harold Volkmer's district and then Kenny Hulsoff's district.
So. Yeah, Blaine's great guy, great friend. We fly back and forth a lot together. But he was up in my district. We had a meeting with some bankers since he's a leader in the financial services community. And I planned enough time to watch at least a couple innings of the Cards-Braves game. I wish I hadn't.
I wish I could say I've never seen anything like it, but I have, and here's where I saw it. In 1996, when the Braves played the Cardinals, and I was at that game.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't remember how I got my tickets. I was not a privileged elitist at the time, and this was before StubHub, probably, but I bought tickets, and I wasn't making a whole lot of money, and it was probably pretty pricey, if I remember correctly. So I remember sitting in the bleachers, and that game was over, like, by the thing, the people felt like. At SunTrust yesterday. I can't even remember. I give credit to the fans who stuck it out. I really do, because there were probably people still making their way into the stadium. They walk in, they see the score, like, what the hell happened?
Oh, no, we were commenting on that. I was in Decatur, Illinois, sitting at Daugherty's Pub with Blaine and folks from our team, another buddy of mine who's a big Cardinal fan. And I made the comment after, I think, about 8 runs. I said, you know, most of the people in Atlanta haven't even gotten out of traffic yet.
That's
look
right.
At all the empty seats.
Yeah.
I'd turn around.
Well, look, sorry that happened to you, buddy. here's what I'd say. At least the Raiders are winning now. However, we have a standing in, I can't explain Rodney's taste in sports teams. I really wouldn't even venture to get into that. But we have a standing bet as a Raiders fan, as a Chiefs fan, that we, and I don't think I've ever really had to wear the garb, but when the Chiefs
you
win.
You have.
And
you
one
put a
time,
helmet on.
One time, that's right, I did put a helmet on. One time out of like 5 years. But I forgot the Chiefs gear today for you to wear.
Oh, really?
No, I didn't. I got it right here. He looked excited. I got the jersey right here. We'll put it on during the break.
I haven't reminded you.
Since you did, you actually
I will
did remind
my bets.
Me. What are you thinking?
He actually did.
He texted me and he said, bring the Chiefs gear on Thursday. I always pay my bets.
I believe it was bring the Chiefs crap.
I think it was, because then I quoted it back to you, the Chiefs crap. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
All right, sports out of the way. And unfortunately, we have to talk about serious stuff this afternoon. First of all, and I'll be honest with you, I'm still digesting some of the Giuliani and the associates who were arrested by the feds. Have you had a chance to look at that at all?
No, I have not. I mean, I'm seeing the reports. You know, we'll take a look at it. But in the end, you know, let's see where the evidence goes.
Yeah, that's just a little bizarre twist, I think, this afternoon to all of that. And we're certainly going to keep track of that, because these guys were, as we reported in the last hour, I mean, they were going to the airport with one-way tickets, and it seems pretty suspicious. So your friend and colleague, John Shimkus, was on yesterday. Mm-hmm. He had reminded me earlier this week that he's been to the Ukraine twice in the last year. And I asked him about the situation with the whistleblower. You and I have had a chance to talk a little bit about this. But then we talked about the Kurds in Syria, and he was very unhappy. And I don't know if you heard the bite that was on KMOX or that was on my show. Very, very dissatisfied with the president's decision on this, as are a lot of Republicans. Where are you?
Well, I'm not happy with it. I think it's a short-sighted decision. You know, I don't agree with anybody 100% of the time, even the president. And unfortunately, in the 24-hour news cycle that we have today, because I disagree with the Syria decision, I'll get asked if I disagree with everything the president does. That's not the case. I think we're in a great economy. I think the United States is in a much better position with President Trump at the helm than Hillary Clinton ever would have put us in. But this decision in Syria, I think will go down and as his biggest foreign policy blunder and will have implications for the United States of America for years and decades to come in the Middle East.
So for people who did not hear Congressman Shimkus yesterday, this is what he said.
I'm heartbroken. In fact, I called my chief of staff in D.C. I said, pull my name off the I support Donald Trump list. I mean, this was just, we have just stabbed our allies in the back. The Kurds go back all the way to the first Gulf War. We protected their airspace in the no-fly zone. They have all the areas have been loyal U.S. ally supporters and been doing well. This has just shocked, embarrassed, and angered
people. Now, cynical political observers would say, well, he can say that because he's not running for re-election. He announced he's not running for re-election because those are pretty strong words, and many Republicans have been unwilling to go that far on the president.
I've known John a long time, and John texted yesterday, and you know, I think he's wanting to pull his name off of being an honorary chair of the 2020 Trump campaign that he and I agreed to and others did. I still, when you look at this decision, I can see this being heartbreaking to John. John is somebody who has been a leader in bringing the Baltic states, the former, you know, Soviet republics that make up the Baltic states, including Ukraine, into the Western world. This is personal for him. Remember, he's Lithuanian, and he has been a leader in his time in Congress in building those relationships. And this is a big deal. This issue with Syria is a big deal to a John Shimkus because he's a soldier, he's a member of Congress, and he's somebody who believes when America says what they're going to do, they better damn well do it.
But you know, there's probably constituents of yours and of Congressman Shimkus as well, and just people listening right now, they say, look, and the president seems to come from this school of thought, we campaigned on this, we don't need to be involved in all these areas across the planet. And there are a lot of people who, a lot of Republicans who agree with that, probably a lot of Democrats who agree with that,
yeah.
And they don't understand because these things, and look, even for a guy like me, and I'm not very smart, you know that, Rodney, these are very complicated issues. And unless you're in there all the time, like Congressman Shimkus, and experiencing all this and have the knowledge in the history, it's kind of hard to get your hand around it, your arms around an issue like this, because if you're sitting here in the middle of the country, Southern Illinois, St. Louis area, Missouri, it's like, why do I care about what's going on? I got problems here to deal with, and that's what this president's taking care of. That is at least part of the response.
Sure, sure. No, I got it. I was in Hardin, Illinois right before this. I did some open office hours. We kind of had a open forum, and we were talking about impeachment, and I had some pro-Trump supporters sitting to my left. And then somebody asked me about Syria, and I said exactly what I just said to you. I think it's going to be a disaster. I think it's wrong decision. And immediately the folks to my left that were defending the president immediately said, well, we think there's another side to
this. Right.
And you know, there's always going to be people, no matter who is president, if they make a decision, they're going to be with him or they're going to be against him. But I've tried to be consistent when it comes to even the Obama administration. When it comes to foreign intervention, when it comes to our military being anywhere, I want the U.S. to protect those who have worked to protect us the most. And in this case with the Kurds, I'm upset because I think we did them wrong in Iraq at the behest of Turkey once again. I think we've done them even worse this time. And it frustrates me because there was no bigger failure when it comes to Syria and Syria policy and fighting ISIS than the last administration. This now takes the successes that the Trump administration had in really beating back ISIS with the help of the Kurds, and now we have a chance to lose it.
That's why
if Erdogan
confusing.
Moves forward and lets those ISIS prisoners out, this could be devastating for the United States.
Illinois Congressman Roddy Davis, hang tight. We're going to change wardrobe here. Here, I'm going to throw you the Chiefs jersey. I'm going to put that on. I can't wait to take some
stuff?
Pictures. Now, we'll, you know what? I actually thought about bringing Cardinal stuff, but we'll let the 13 runs yesterday just be the final nail in that coffin. Rodney's back with more in a moment on KMOX.
Mark Reardon now.
No, never. Yes, always.
Total Information PM at 4 on KMOX.
I was just telling Rodney about the baseball programming with the Cardinals in did I mention the Cardinals are in the National League Championship Series? Did you know that?
Really?
Yeah, they beat the, who are you a fan of again? Oh, oh, the Braves, that's
seriously.
Right.
Did they play recently?
Yes, I believe that they did. So the first hour, usually, as you know, Rodney, we have the Reardon Roundtable on Fridays, and tomorrow Tom Ackerman and Ozzie Smith will be here for that hour, and they're going to handle the 2 o'clock hour all of next week. And basically, they took a guy who hardly works, that's me, and said, hey, would you like to work less in the next week? And I said, is there a camera somewhere on, like, candid camera? But that's what's going to happen. I'm off a few days
Capitalism
anyway.
Sucks, man.
So we have the pictures that are going to go up on social of the Chiefs jersey that Congressman Davis is wearing, paying off his bet, standing bet every season between the Chiefs and the Raiders. He's got bad taste in sports teams. He's usually right on the policy stuff, but that remains to be seen as well. But I do appreciate you paying off the bet, wearing the Chiefs garb. We'll put those things out on social media. Let's get to impeachment, though, yeah. and what you think about this. We had a conversation in the aftermath of the whistleblower report, and, you know, there are some people that think that some of the stuff that's going on right now, even with Syria, although I hope to be not that cynical, is throwing shade because of impeachment. You think that's a part of this at all?
No, I don't.
I'd hope not, right?
Yeah, I don't think so at all. I think the president was, looking at it as I think he just listened to the wrong people.
Okay, let me play a soundbite here from the vice president, because there really seems to be a dramatic difference in interpretation between both sides, Republicans and Democrats, when it comes to the whistleblower and the transcript of that call. So the question that Mike Pence is asked, are you okay with the president asking a foreign leader, the assumption is for something in return. And here's what he said.
I don't believe that's the case. And again, but I know that's the way
it.
That
he said it. The president
I know that's
said
the way
it.
Chairman Schiff characterized it in
the
his manufactured version
the
of the transcript. But the American people should read the transcript, and they will see that the president did nothing wrong. There was no pressure. There was no quid pro quo. The president simply raised issues of importance and interest to the American people.
So, Congressman, the vice president there, referring to the whistleblower report, the reporter's trying to press him because obviously in the aftermath of that, you had the comments on the White House lawn last week where he invited China to investigate Joe Biden as well. So that has been problematic for a lot of people out there. On the quid pro quo issue, I believe you told me you didn't see that.
I didn't.
Why is it, though, that Republicans, I mean, again, this is a completely partisan issue for the most part. Republicans see it one way, Democrats see it the other way. Where does this all get worked out? I had Senator Blunt tell me a couple of days ago that he thinks that, well, you guys are going to vote on impeachment in the House, right?
I hope.
There will be a vote. The
sure
Democrats
be.
Control the House. The articles of impeachment, I suppose, will get sent.
Well, no, no.
We're doing the inquiry vote, right?
We got to vote on an inquiry.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what has happened the last three times it's ever happened in our nation's history.
Okay, so you vote on that, and then what happens?
Well, then it moves forward. Then they would set up an investigatory committee. If Speaker Pelosi wants to use the Intelligence Committee to do that, I think that's pretty blatantly partisan. It's a committee made up of people appointed only by the Speaker and by our leader. It doesn't even go through the members' steering committee on our side. That would send a message to me that this is nothing but partisan
politics. But it is nothing but partisan politics. Well, I mean, I don't want to say nothing, because I have said on the record, I don't think this is a big nothing burger. I do think there are some questions and maybe facts that need to emerge about this, and I haven't even had more questions now after this Giuliani connection. On the other hand, I do think that they're overplaying their hand. I'm assuming you have some of the same questions that the president has and others about Congressman Schiff, your colleague, on the judiciary, or I guess he's on the... What is his committee again?
Intelligence.
Intelligence. Thank you.
Yeah.
See, this is the word that I was looking for. But there's problems with, or I guess questions with, whether or not he had communication with the whistleblower before that. Now, the whole notion
and
that the
whistleblower was honest about it.
Well, right. And that's a legitimate question as well. But I also think that just because some people are trying to flip this around and say the whistleblower is clearly a partisan, might be true. I think we're hearing that it's true, but does that really matter if the conversation still took place? I mean, the conversation is what it is. Pretty simple from the transcript, right?
Yeah.
Do you want to hear more answers from people who were in that room when that conversation took place, or are you good with the transcript in and of itself?
I mean, you've got a secondhand report that is now labeled a whistleblower report that was put together with the assistance of Chairman Schiff and the Democrat staffers on the Intelligence Committee, allegedly. And, And then we compare that with a transcript that has never been released in our lifetime of a call between our president and a foreign leader. I would go with the transcript, and I read the transcript, and I don't see any criminal wrongdoing in that transcript.
I wanted to play, I'm going to see if I can find this here, because this is still a story that's playing today with Hollywood celebrities. Did you see, you know, you're a football guy, did you see Ellen DeGeneres with George W. Bush?
George W.
So she gets all kinds of pushback on this, and here's when she explained it.
So I've got to say, when we were invited, I was aware that I was going to be surrounded with people from very different views and beliefs. And I'm not talking about politics. I was rooting for the Packers. And get this, everybody in the Cowboys suite was rooting for the Cowboys. And so I had to hide my cheese hat in Porsche's purse. And don't get me wrong. I like the Cowboys. I love the Cowboys. I love all the Village people, as a matter of fact.
So she was being real funny there, and I thought the comedy was good. But then she kind of gets serious here, and I think her message is on point.
But a lot of people were mad, and they did what people do when they're mad. They tweet. But here's one tweet that I loved. This person says, Ellen and George Bush together makes me have faith in America again. And thing. I'm friends with George Bush. In fact, I'm friends with a lot of people who don't share the same beliefs that I have. We're all different, and I think that we've forgotten that that's okay that we're all different. For instance, I wish people wouldn't wear fur. I don't like it, but I'm friends with people who wear fur. And I'm friends with people who are furry, as a matter of fact. I have friends who should tweeze more. And I have... But just because I don't agree with someone on everything doesn't mean that I'm not going to be friends with them. When I say be kind to one another, I don't mean only the people that think the same way that you do. I mean be kind to everyone. Doesn't matter.
And look, some of these themes go back to the shooting with Steve Scalise, which unfortunately you were on the field that day taking batting practice. So I know that you spoke out along these lines at that time. But just, I don't know if you've seen the response. You're a busy United States congressman. So Vanity Fair runs an article by a columnist that says, for decades, Ellen DeGeneres has been the sunny representative for a brighter world we might all live in if we were kinder to one another. But that imagined utopia seems increasingly out of touch with reality. And then Mark Ruffalo, who I've always kind of liked him as an actor. I've even interviewed him before. Pretty nice guy. He's so whacked out. Here's what he tweets. Sorry, until, you know, some of these celebrities are blasting Ellen. Sorry, until George W. Bush is brought to justice for the crimes of the Iraq War, including the American-led torture, Iraqi deaths and displacement, and the deep scars, emotional and otherwise, inflicted on our military that served his folly, we can't even begin to talk about his kindness. Now, I'd have to cross-check and see if Mark Ruffalo had a tweet similar to that about Hillary Clinton, who also voted to go into Iraq. But the nature of the vitriol here is not, we're not peeling this back. And even when someone like Ellen DeGeneres, who's well-liked by Hollywood, by people in middle America, she's a lesbian, she's very funny, she's getting hammered over this right now.
Yeah, it's terrible. I think it's indicative of where we are as a society right now. I think we need to take a step back and realize that what Ellen DeGeneres and George W. Bush have as friendship is what should be normal. Not abnormal. What's abnormal are people like Mark Ruffalo talking about how, you know, we should go back in time and somehow prosecute a president for making decisions that he thought was going to make America safer. This is the problem we have. I think it's been exacerbated by social media. I think it's exacerbated by the 24-hour news cycle. And frankly, I think we ought to start a hashtag, tweeze more, friends. I mean, is that not hilarious? Look, I don't agree with Ellen DeGeneres
on
a lot of issues.
Yeah.
She'd probably never vote for me. But my Lord, that was freaking funny.
Yeah, she's funny, and she's got a good point here. And everybody, I think that there were certainly mistakes made by the Bush administration on several issues. I don't think any administration
Absolutely.
Is perfect.
Courage.
That particular Iraqi war episode, though, is a lot more nuanced than saying, hey, we had bad information and Bush lied. I mean, it was bad intelligence we learned, but the world was pretty united on Saddam. And a lot of the Democrats that are blasting, you know, Republicans over these things and have been for years were on board when that occurred. It was a different climate, and I wonder how many people really remember that. All right, Congressman, I appreciate you coming in here and paying off your debt to me and to fellow Chiefs fans because
brutal.
He's wearing the Chiefs jersey right now. We'll put those pictures up on social media to embarrass him thoroughly again. And I'm so sorry about your Braves, Roddy. My goodness, can we do anything for you?
Tweeze a little more.
There you go. Hashtag tweeze a little more. Illinois Congressman Roddy Davis with us this afternoon on KMOX. Good to see you. We'll catch you again soon.
We've got football. Tonight, it's the Giants and Patriots, and you can hear it here. Kickoff at 7 p.m. on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
A lot of people worked up about this 12-year-old kid in Kansas, Overland Park, Kansas City area, arrested, handcuffs, put into juvenile detention because students asked the girl if she wanted to kill anyone in the school. You know, if you would kill anyone in the school, who would you want to kill? And she responded with a gun gesture with her finger. And she was placed under arrest. So this is one of those zero tolerance policy things. This is the Overland Park Police Chief, Frank Donchez.
The Shawnee Mission School District was made aware of a potential threat by a student. The information was shared through their online portal that allows for students and others to report safety concerns. The officer conducted his investigation and determined that there was probable cause to make an arrest in the case, and the 13-year-old was arrested and transported to juvenile detention. This student pointed her finger at several other students in a manner as if, you know, when you're a little kid and you play cops and robbers and you point your finger and do the bang bang with your thumb. That was in response to a question that was asked of that student: if you could kill anybody in the school, who would you kill?
All right, so she points her fingers. This is where I always think there's some missing information here. I'll let him finish here, the chief.
The students who were involved in this conversation and experienced this finger pointing felt threatened to the point that they contacted school officials to express their concern and fear of this individual. In this day and age where school threats are a major concern, they're not something that we take lightly.
Okay. Well, that might be true, but let's think about this just a little bit, because, and maybe there's something I'm missing here, but you have a girl who's 12 years old who points her finger with no weapon at other kids. The kids say they feel threatened, and she's arrested. That wouldn't allow for maybe a trip to the superintendent or the principal's office to have a discussion, or maybe get the parents involved before we get the police involved, and they put the kid who's 12 years old in handcuffs. Now, there's possibly... usually in situations like this, there's a little bit more to the story, but that is quite stunning just knowing the information that we know. I wanted to touch on the Matt Lauer allegations too, because I just think it's utterly ridiculous. And I don't know what really happened here between Matt Lauer and this woman who worked at NBC News. And he wrote this letter that was very graphic, and he denies that he raped her. But keep in mind that the rape charge from the reporter Brooke Nevels, who it's been chronicled, they had an affair. In fact, he even admits in his letter, he says, I had an extramarital affair with Brooke Nevels in 2014. It began when she came to my hotel room late one night in Sochi, Russia. We engaged. You don't see this every day, okay? This is where you don't see someone coming out with a statement like this, because the allegation is that he raped her anally. And I apologize, parents, if there's kids listening here, we're going to try to keep it adult-like, but where he writes in his letter, he says, we performed, he comes right out with it here. We performed oral sex on each other. We had vaginal sex and we had anal sex. Each act was mutual and completely consensual. Lauer says the story Brooke tells is filled with false details intended to only create the impression this was an abusive encounter. Nothing could be further from the truth. Now, look, I'm not here to carry water for Matt Lauer. I don't know him. I've actually never met him. I will tell you this, John Ziegler, who is a friend of the show and a fellow talk show host who we brought into town many years ago from Los Angeles when he did the documentary on Sarah Palin about Barack Obama and media bias. And that was really, really good. And I love John. Well, John, his response, I don't have my phone with me right now or I'd pull this up. He doesn't like Matt Lauer. He went on the Today Show during that whole episode, and Matt Lauer and him didn't really get along. But he said, this was his quote to me, the only person being anally raped here in this whole thing is Matt Lauer. You're telling me that you can have, now, again, not defending anything that he did that was inappropriate, certainly at work. And I understand the dynamics here of someone who is powerful and you have a woman in the workplace who, I guess you can make the case that the reason that she continued the affair and didn't say anything is because she was worried about her job. But all of these things that she alleges happened, or that particular incident, happened in the early part of that affair when they continued for months after that. And what he writes in his letter is that they've seen each other. Maybe this doesn't make a difference to people, but he says, she claims our first encounter was an assault, yet she actively participated in arranging future meetings and met me at my apartment on multiple occasions to continue the affair. She says, I was the one pursuing the relationship, yet once it was over, she was the one asking me and calling me to rekindle it. She says she felt pressure to continue the affair because I had control over her career, but she did not work for me, the Today Show, or NBC News. She said she wanted to remain anonymous, yet she was reportedly trying to sell a book deal within a year after filing her complaint. She said she wanted NBC to do the right thing, yet she sought a monetary payment, and 2 years after I was fired, she's stepping forward to do more damage. He says, there are people who fully understand the actual dynamic that existed between Brooke and me. They have reluctantly and quietly reached out in the past 2 years and shared what they know. They have accurately described Brooke and her role in this affair. I hope these people will understand these allegations cross a serious line, and what they can share is vital truth, even if it may seem unpopular. I'm with Matt Lauer on that. I think that if you have allegations like this, you need to get to the truth. And it seems extremely unfair that someone who had an extramarital affair with someone consensually for months can now go back years later, make an allegation in a reckless, irresponsible book by Ronan Farrow and destroy someone's reputation even further than it's destroyed. Matt Lauer destroyed his own reputation. He's to blame for that, but I don't think this is deserved at this point. This is very similar to the Kavanaugh situation, and I will tell you that it's not a comfortable situation, especially being someone who's in the public eye, that someone can just grab any kind of allegation, throw it out there, and somehow it sticks. I was on the show earlier this afternoon, CNN contributor, also a main contributor to this show, former RNC spokesman, and he gave me a heads up that about an hour ago, Jake Tapper tweeted out my interview with Congressman Shimkus for yesterday, in which he said, on the Syria decision, it's terrible, it's despicable, I'm heartbroken. In fact, I called my chief of staff and said, pull my name off the I support Donald Trump list. So that got our web people are going to love that. It's all about clicks, right? Now they got, how many followers does he have? Just 2.1 million. He didn't put an at Mark Reardon in there, the Tapper. That sort of hacks me off just a little bit.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Sponsored this afternoon by the Good Feet Store, pain relief and comfort to fit any budget. So I love this band, the Avett Brothers. Really, really good. They did like three nights here a few years ago, and they have a new record out, came out Friday, and it's just full of liberal nonsense and white guilt. And I'm thinking, seriously, guys, I love the music, but I don't want to hear this. And I'm fine with, you know, artists that want to include politics if that's what they do. These guys have really never done that very much. Anyway, it brings me to Bill Maher, and I find myself agreeing with him more and more. His advice for his liberal friends on the issue of white guilt.
And finally, new rule, white liberals have to start listening to me when I tell them you can't be more offended than the victim. It happened again last week when presidential contender Andrew Yang faced criticism because he said that SNL should not have fired comedian Shane Gillis over racist comments Gillis made about Asians. That's when the internet did what it does best and deemed Yang a racist for not being offended. Because if he wasn't offended, well, someone had to be.
You know, it's funny because you only get half-hearted response there from the, they don't agree with him. I agree with him.
There was a study done last year where people were asked to rate their feelings about various races, and white liberals were the only group that has a bias against themselves. They want to hang out only with people who are not them. That's like your mother preferring the neighbor's kids.
I mean, he's joking about this, but it is serious.
There is a weird self-loathing going on among white liberals, and it's not helping anyone. Lifting up those who society has cheated or forsaken, that's liberalism. Hating all things white is just tedious virtue signaling. You look like Justin Timberlake in Bad Teacher.
I just hate slavery so, so much. Slavery's the worst. If I could go back in time and undo slavery, I would. I hate it.
The answer to mass incarceration is to stop putting undeserving blacks in prison, not to put more white people in Twitter jail.
Again, kind of tepid response there. The lefties in the audience.
Every thought needs a disclaimer now. The other day I heard a guy say, I realize I'm only speaking as a white male and I acknowledge our tragic history of oppression, but you left your lights on.
That is a great line there, because you hear that actual line outside of the left your lights on a regular basis. One more here.
Look, white privilege is real. And yes, you have some advantages for being white, but you also have some disadvantages. Many of you were born with a terrible personality. But folks, you don't need to advertise it. What's with the I'm embarrassed to be white subgenre on the internet? I'm finding myself constantly embarrassed to be white. I'm watching Tall Girl. I've never been so embarrassed to be white. Retweet if you're embarrassed to be white. Rosanna Arquette tweeted, I'm sorry I was born white and privileged. It disgusts me and I feel so much shame. Exactly. You think it's hard being a black man in a white man's world? Try being a white woman who feels bad about you being a black man in a white man's world.
Well, look, it was funny stuff there, but he's absolutely on point, and I just lost the will anymore to understand some of the inexplicable out there. Bill Maher, our audio cut of the day on KMOX. Total Information PM is coming up.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.